the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay and I'm exhausted, emotionally exhausted. Stay with me, you'll understand why. It's a welcome back to the studio for Watford and Wales striker Helen Ward. Welcome back, Helen.
Thank you for having me.
And alongside her, it's a brand new welcome to the Offside Rule Bunker. It's a former Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool and current Reading and England defender Gemma Davison.
Thanks for having me on.
You two have known each other since you were, what, 13, 14?
Probably even younger than that.
Yeah.
About 10, 9 or 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Playing together at...
Watford.
Watford, there you go. Yeah, so
stint at Arsenal as well.
Yeah. And Arsenal as well, yeah. So old teammates to help us along with this one. Well, we thought we had all the drama last night, didn't we? But no, Helen was with us last night. Does tonight top it, Helen?
Yeah, definitely.
It all came back again tonight. And let's start with heartbreak for Scotland. A 3-3 draw against Argentina sees the Scots out of their debut World Cup. The agony, though, Scotland were 3 goals to the good before Argentina fought their way back into the game with 2 goals in quick succession and then a penalty conceded by Scotland, which was saved, had to be retaken, only for Argentina to draw level.
It's Fal Menendez. Oh, and that's going to be a penalty. Surely, no. They will have a look at this. She's made her decision. Penalty on Segundo. It's saved! And again! Oh dear, it's going to be retaken, isn't it? Just when Scotland thought they were out of the woods. On Segundo, no mistake this time.
A really tough one for Scotland, this. The award of the pen for a foul in the area by Sophie Howard, we said when we were watching the game, was fair. So let's put that in there. Lee Alexander saved it, only for it to be retaken because the keeper had moved off her line. Your reaction to that?
By the letter of the law, it's the right decision. I just don't know if I like the law. I think it's almost impossible as a keeper on a penalty anyway. You know, the odds are stacked against you. And to be trying to think about which way to dive, which way that particular penalty taker takes their penalties, and then also where your feet are going to be mid-dive or, you know, partway through your dive is really difficult. And especially on the retake, you're going to be in 2 minds. You've been booked. You can't do it again. You risk being sent off. What can you do? You're never going to save that second penalty. So you might as well, if they've come off their line, you might as well just give them a goal. Because
really?
As a goalkeeper, I just don't know what you're supposed to do other than hope that they miss the target.
But is there a case to say that this rule has been known about for months and that goalkeepers should have been, and the goalkeeping coaches, they should have been preparing for this?
Yeah, and I've seen a lot on social media that Lee Alexander was talked to by the referee. She didn't necessarily listen because you saw her go off and pick something up off the floor. Maybe she needed to pay more attention to it herself at that point. But, you know, it's the last minute of a World Cup.
No, it shouldn't. Your final group game that decides whether you stay in a World Cup or not.
Very true. And if you're 3-0 up, you shouldn't be in that position in the first place in a must-win game. It is something we said that goalkeeper coaches now are going to have a real look at, because if you're involved in a game that's got VAR, then it's certainly something that could come up. And we've seen it in 2 or 3 games now. So it's going to be a development area for goalkeepers and goalkeeper coaches for sure.
And in this tournament, it's not just goalkeeping as well. It's also looking at handballs as well. You know, you're going to have to coach around those new rules too. And we've seen all sorts of implications of VAR during this tournament. I don't want to get into a VAR debate. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'll get very angry. So let's instead relive the glory of these Scotland goals, because let's not take these away from them. To go 3-0 up against Argentina was an achievement. I know they threw it away, but we need to look at these goals because they were good. So Erin Cuthbert and Kim Little combining for the first, an unmarked bullet header from Jem Beattie for the second, just into that second half, and a lovely tap in by Erin Cuthbert from a Caroline Weir corner. And Cuthbert, Gemma, a player you know really well.
What a talent. At Chelsea, I remember her coming in on trial. She was just phenomenal. I think she's just, everyone knows now, I think she's displayed herself this season fantastically. For the first Scotland goal, she's relentless. She's taken 2 players out of the game, faking to come inside. She's gone outside and then played it across on her left foot over to Kim Little. And that, for me, displays exactly what the future holds for Erin Cuthbert.
Yeah, so had her part in the first, scored the third as well. And that's what we've been looking for from the Scotland side, isn't it? Especially with the first goal, that link-up between Kim Little and Erin Cuthbert.
I mean, Kim's another player that I know really well, and probably one of the best players I've ever played with. And to have,
I agree with that as well, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I think anyone who knows women's football will say Kim Little is probably one of the best in the world right now. For Erin to play with a player like that, she's very lucky. And for them to be combining on the big stage now together, it's very, very exciting for Scotland.
And does a player like Kim Little make Erin Cuthbert better?
Without a doubt. I don't know if you agree with me.
Yeah, 100%. If you're playing with a player at that level, it's only going to improve your own game. And I think you can see that from Erin's performances this World Cup.
Yeah. But that 3-goal advantage wasn't to remain, as we've said. And this is because there were 2 goals in 5 minutes for Argentina that really sent things into a spin. Was that the impact of sub Milagros Menendez on her debut, or a case of Scotland who should have known better, Helen?
A little bit of both. I think you have to give the sub a lot of credit. I'm not going to try and pronounce her name myself.
Menendez.
She obviously had a huge impact on the game and maybe unsettled Scotland. I think once Scotland got to 3-0, they perhaps thought the job was done and then retreated.
Yeah.
And shouldn't have done, because they were playing so, so well. And the game was theirs. It was
15 minutes to
exactly.
go.
Exactly. They didn't need to retreat. You still got a 3-goal lead. You didn't need to back off. And I think there were one or two little mistakes where the nerves have obviously crept in. The second goal off the bar, I feel like Lee Alexander did so well to get a hand to it, but maybe she just needed a stronger wrist. But I'm no goalkeeper. I don't want to criticise too much, because she has had a good tournament in general. But yeah, when you're 3-0 up and it gets to 3-2, then things go out of the window in terms of tactics and how you're doing. You're just trying to see the game out. And unfortunately for Scotland, they weren't able to do that.
Let's sum up this tournament for Scotland, because, of course, this is the last time we're going to be talking about them, which is really sad. What are your takeaways from this Scotland team? Have they progressed enough for you? Have they shown us what they're made of? Or has it been a disappointing tournament for them?
Personally, I'm really disappointed. In a good way, I really wanted them to progress through, just because of the amount of talent that's in that team. I mean, we're talking about Erin Cuthbert and Kim Little, but don't forget Jennifer Beattie scored a great header tonight. Caroline Weir, what a great player. What a great season she's had at Man City. Emsley as well. I mean, the talent coming through in that team is exceptional. And I'm really disappointed that they haven't done better, but I'm really excited to see what the future holds for that, for Scotland.
OK, well, let's speak to Emma Dodds now, who's been with this Scotland team throughout their World Cup experience. Emma, you and the players, you must be absolutely heartbroken. What are they saying? How are they even beginning to try and digest this?
Good evening. You've hit the nail on the head. I think everybody associated with Scotland is absolutely devastated by this result. And that's largely due to the fact that we put ourselves into such a good position in this match. Scotland knew they had to win this one to give themselves any chance of progressing out of this group. And my goodness, they put themselves in a great position. 3 goals up. And then everything went wrong, of course. Argentina got themselves back into it. They then got the second goal. And then there was the scenes with the penalty, the retake and the injury time. So scenes of absolute devastation is all I can say, in the tunnel and around the mouth of the tunnel at full time from the Scotland camp, because they fully deserved to be 3-0 ahead in this match. Argentina were dead on their feet. They couldn't cope with Scotland. But unfortunately, they managed to get themselves back into the game. And then there was just a degree of decisions that didn't go Scotland's way that ultimately have cost the team. And yeah, very, very, very disappointed Scotland squad out there now.
Yeah, it's agonising. It really is. Can you just clear up Rachel Corsi's comments post-match for us, Emma, saying that the third goal from Argentina was ridiculous?
Yeah, so basically Sophie Howard came on the pitch and then tackled an Argentina player in the box. The play was then cleared, no decision was given, and the referee then went to VAR. But while this was also going on, Scotland were trying to get Fiona Brown on the pitch. They signalled that the substitution could be made, which meant that some of the Scotland players stopped. And then as Fiona was coming on the pitch, the referee allowed the play to start, which ultimately led to the confusion and the foul as it all unfolded. So I think Rachel was pointing out that the referee signalled that a substitution could be made, but then allowed play to go on before the substitute had actually come on the pitch properly. So it led to a huge amount of confusion. And then there was the VAR decision that awarded the penalty. There was then the save from Lee Alexander, which was an excellent save, but adjudged to have been illegal because our feet were off the line. There was then the VAR decision to retake the penalty, of which Argentina scored. So it was 3-3. But around about 8 minutes had passed during all of this time. 4 minutes injury time were signalled and approximately one was played. So Scotland had no time to try and get that winner that they were looking for in the match. So in that final sort of 8 to 10 minutes of the game, it really did descend into chaos and the officials lost all control really of what was going on.
Will there be any official complaints about that? I mean, what does Scotland do? Do they just accept that that's how it is, that that's the loss and they're out? Obviously, there's nothing that they can do about it, but will there be words about this? I mean, what can they do?
I think it might be too raw at the moment. Certainly Shelley Kerr after the match, you know, said in her interviews that she couldn't really sum up her emotions because it was all too soon. She was still trying to digest everything that had happened. The fact that, you know, she got her tactics bang on by playing Erin Cuthbert up front. She had Kim Little just off it. Both of those girls got on the score sheet. The side were 3-0 ahead. And then all of a sudden, Scotland, you know, they allowed Argentina to come back into the match. So I think as far as any further action concerned, I think that'll be a discussion at a later date. But right now, I think just the ultimate disappointment, having been in such a good position and then ultimately going out, you know, it really is. It's super disappointing because Scotland as well are the only debutant team to have scored in all of their group games. Ultimately, it means nothing now, but I think the overwhelming factor that was spoken about by all of the players post-match was the pride at how they had played up until that point of allowing Argentina back into the match. And so, yeah, ultimate disappointment, but definite positives to take from the performance tonight.
And a silver lining for Jem Beattie as well, Emma, scoring in the same stadium as her dad. Just explain how this one works.
Yeah, that's right, because Jen Beattie is the daughter of John Beattie, who is a Scotland rugby legend, and he actually scored a try for Scotland in a Five Nations match. I think it was 1987 here at the same stadium. So she got on the score sheet tonight for Scotland, her first World Cup goal. And she follows up her father, who also scored, as it were, but it was a different sport in rugby, crossing the whitewash there for Scotland in the Five Nations. So a great moment for her. But again, ultimately tinged with a lot of disappointment given the overall result.
A nice moment then for Jen Beattie, and quickly Erin Cuthbert and that photo. She waved a photo of herself as a young kid dressed in her Scotland kit, I think it was, outside Ibrox. And apparently that was a photo that her dad had given her and said to her, remember this kid who wanted it really badly. And when she scored, she held that photo up high. So some very emotional moments for that Scotland team. All right, let's look now to the Lionesses, who had a much happier encounter back in Nice. Well, England have now won 3 out of 3 group games for the first time in their World Cup history. A 2-0 win against Japan sees them top Group D with 9 points. Starts for Tony Duggan, Debbie Stokes, Rachel Daly, Georgia Stanway, and a very convincing look to that side in the first half, Gemma.
I thought the changes were fantastic. Georgia Stanway, in particular in the first half, I thought she was outstanding. Just for the first goal alone, turning the player like that was fantastic. To put top draw pass in behind for Ellen White to slide in was fantastic from her. And Rachel Daly, direct, really, really direct player, athletic, a real threat in the final third. Tony Duggan as well. Anything in a round goal, you know that she's going to hit the target. So that's a threat alone.
She had a good chance in the second half. She was a little bit quiet for me in the first half, Tony. But I think that gives us a great indication of the depth of this England squad and arguably, Helen, a depth that they've never had before.
Yeah, for sure. When you look at the players that came in, you had to sort of work out who'd gone out because it was such a strong side that you couldn't really pick. I couldn't pick 11. You know, if I was asked to pick the strongest 11, I'd find it very difficult from that squad. It shows the depth. We haven't seen Fran Kirby today, who's obviously starts nearly every game under Phil Neville. Nikita Paris was a late sub and she made such an impact in games in the past. So there's a lot of firepower. There's a lot of experience as well. And in the younger players that haven't got it, they've got so much talent and experience at club level in big competitions that I think, you know, it is a good sign for them in this tournament and beyond.
But it wasn't a rollover. England with just the one goal advantage for much of the second half, and Japan fought their way back into it. How were they able to do that, Helen?
They just stepped up their possession, I think. They brought on Sagasawa up front, who within about a 10-15 minute spell had 4 or 5 chances to bring Japan level and probably ahead if she'd have taken them. England's possession dropped. They were caught out too many times. Kira Walsh was caught in dangerous areas in the middle of the park, you know, turning into trouble. I just think Japan sort of showed their potential in that second half, and for them going forward in this competition, it could be a good thing that they perhaps are going to peak at the right time. They've got through the group unscathed with sort of limited performances, but that second half will give them a lot of hope. I thought, as I mentioned, Sagasawa was very good. Iwabuchi had a very good second half, got involved in a lot of their play, and they really just penned England back. Every time, you know, you're flicking between the two games tonight, and every time I looked at the screen in the England game, they were deep in their own half with Japan in possession.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, you have to say well done to Ellen White, another very good finish in the second half. And that's three left-footed goals she scored in the tournament now, which is impressive
else,
as a right-footed
really?
Player, and really good finishes as well, by the way. So it's great for England that they can take that sort of pressure. Yeah, they've got away with it one or two. Karen Bardsley's made some exceptional saves, but they've then gone up the other end and been clinical themselves. And that's a sign of a good team, that they take their chances when they come, even if they have lived on the edge a little bit.
Yeah, a real Jekyll and Hyde, this Japan team for me, because we've seen so many different sides to them. And you can tell that that's because of the inexperience within some of the squad. And when it clicks like it did today, it works, but it takes them time to be able to find that. And I think England really going at them in that first half, if you hit that Japan side with pace and with physicality, that's when they struggle. The introduction of Karen Carney in the second half, Gemma, a player you know very well. Just tell us what difference that made.
Watching that game, I think it was crying out for Karen Carney. The experience she's got, the technical ability she's got, she came in centre midfield.
You actually called that as well, didn't you? You basically said it feels like it's time for Kazza.
I just think she's just got so much experience, but she's a technician as well. She's got a nickname of being the wizard for a reason, and she knows exactly what to do in the right areas. And I thought Japan came out so strongly in the second half. They put on a real high press as well, which I think England found tough to get out. That's why I think their possession kind of fell short. But I just thought her ball retention really improved the side. I mean, we can go through the goal. Everyone I talk about the pass, but she diffused pressure in their own half to allow the ball to go up in the first place. So she just really brought the quality.
Oh, bien joué.
Bon ballon.
Ellie White.
Ellie White.
Et pas de hors-jeu. Et deuxième but. Et deuxième but pour les Anglaises. So British. So British.
Lindsay Hooper, you're in Nice. I can hear the sound of cicadas in the background. That's proof that you're in southern France, where it's warm and balmy. And what a great result for you, because you get to stay on at this World Cup, don't you, if England do?
if only it was to stay on in Nice, eh? All the way to the end. That would be brilliant.
Tell us about the reaction,
though.
But
no, it's great news. Absolutely brilliant. And, you know, ecstatic for the girls, because to top the group, to have three wins, you can't really ask for much more than that from them.
And what about the fans? Because there was a lack of fans there again.
I don't know. You know, it's so difficult to say, because there were definite areas where they looked like they were a bit threadbare in the stadium. But remember, this is quite a big stadium. And then you looked around. I don't know, if you put everyone together, I do think this would be solved if there were just certain tiers closed off or certain areas closed off altogether, rather than it be this scattergun approach. Mm. So it's really difficult to tell, because coming into the stadium, it felt like there were a lot of people. It felt like there was a lot of noise in the build-up, but then during the game, I felt like it went a bit flat.
And what about the players? Let's focus on this, of course, because England, 9 points out of 9 for the first time ever in World Cup history. What are the players saying, and what's the manager saying post-match? Give us all the reactions.
Well, of course, they were absolutely full of the joys of spring. You could tell how much it meant to them. And you could absolutely believe them when they said that they came here to want to win that match. But I think even more pleasing, like, a lot of people were huddling around Karen Bardsley at the end, is that clean sheet. Because to show that they can actually keep a team like Japan at bay, who had a lot of possession in the ball and were very neat with the ball on occasions, but they just could not do anything clinical. And I think the back four that we saw tonight, potentially, is that the best back four of England?
Yeah, questions.
I wonder. And it was great to see them working so well together. I mean, all in all, you can see why Phil wanted to give Nikita a bit of a rest. I think he was quite frustrated that he had to end up bringing her on. That was one of the impressions you got in the press conference, because I think that there were certain players he was trying to just keep out of the game altogether. But he did notice, and I think a lot of the crowd did as well, that fatigue for both teams is really starting to set in.
So that's a vulnerability for England, because we saw that in the first game. It was an earlier kickoff. It was very, very hot in Nice. We're in Nice again today. I know it was 22. We looked at the temperature actually towards the end of the game to see exactly how hot it was. Do England need to work on this? How do they work on this? Because Japan really started to come back into the game. And of course, he made the sub. You know, Carney came on, Paris came on, and things changed up again. But they shouldn't have got themselves into that pressure situation again, should they?
Well, there were a few questions in the post-match press conference around this. The fact that those second half performances, and it was referenced to with the Scotland game as well, which opened this World Cup campaign for England, that they did wilt away. And that was the other game, of course, here in Nice. Now, I don't know so much that it was the temperature as it was the humidity again. This was a later kickoff than the first match against Scotland. So I know that Phil was quite optimistic talking to him in the lead up to the match that would go in England's favour. And ultimately, I think it did. But I think it is that humidity that they've struggled with. But, you know, unless they come back, which we hope they don't, for the third place playoff game, then there won't be another game here in Nice for them. So you'd think that the other venues, the other locations will start to suit England more. But it is that consistency that they need to be able to put across 90 minutes that I think everyone wants to see now.
All right. Well, we will let you go. But I'm interested to know, obviously, you've got a few days off. Hopefully, the players have got a few days off. But you do know, although you don't know who it's against yet, you do know that you're heading to Valenciennes next.
No, but I do know that England have requested to stay a bit longer in Nice. Why wouldn't they? And because I'm following them, that means that I get to stay at least another day.
A hard times, Lindsay Hooper.
So, yeah, I'll be working on that tan. When I get back, there'll be comparison photos to be had between you and I, Kate Borsay.
So as a roundup, England are through and will face a third place finisher, likely to be China, but we won't know until tomorrow. Japan, meanwhile, will face whoever finishes top in Group E. More on that in just a moment. Well, Argentina could still get through if both matches between Cameroon against New Zealand and Thailand against Chile end in a draw.
That's ridiculous, by the way. Sorry, I have to say, I don't...
Do you have beef with this third place team thing?
I do. I know... You can't extend the one World Cup to have too many teams because you dilute the quality. But to go through having not won a game, I just find, I don't know, great if you're that team. If you're Argentina and you go through on 2 points, then brilliant. You've got a second chance. But really, you know, you can get to a knockout stage without winning a game. I think that's madness.
It hasn't happened yet, but it could well do. With that headache out of the way, then it's time to look ahead to tomorrow's matches.
Hello, Offside Rulers. This is producer Ben from the Totally Football Show, here to politely suggest that when you're done with Kate and Co, why don't you mosey on over to us at the Totally Football Show, where we have new shows for you every Monday and Thursday throughout the summer. Currently, we've got James Horncastle telling us why Paul Pogba may not get his move away from Man United.
Where's Pogba going to go? Because ultimately, you look at Real Madrid. Real Madrid have already splurged a hell of a lot of money. Can they go with Pogba? I look at it and I think Juventus is perhaps a more realistic destination for him, because they've got bargaining chips that they can move around. But it's still going to, for both Real Madrid and Juventus, it's going to be a huge onerous deal for them to do.
We've got Jack Lang at the Copa America talking about goals like this. And we've got Ian McIntosh looking back on the time that Tony Pulis did this.
Once, while interviewing him at West Brom, when we had a chat over breakfast and he slapped my bum on the way into the canteen.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I was absolutely fine with that.
So search for the award-winning Totally Football Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom and all the usual places, and keep up to date with what we're doing at The Totally Show.
You're listening to The Offside Rule. I'm Kate Borsay, joined in the studio by Gemma Davison and Helen Ward. Sterling pundits so far, ladies. Thank you very much. Let's look ahead to tomorrow's games. 4 in total, and 2 of them have me salivating at the prospect. Groups E and F are pretty straightforward in the game of World Cup consequences. So let's dive in. Alphabetical order as ever. Group E first. So Canada and the Netherlands are already through to the last 16. So both teams are fighting for top spot. The winner will play Japan and second place takes on second place in Group F. More on that later. Gosh, you're going to have to write yourself notes, aren't you, for this one? A third place qualification is now very much a possibility. So we'll start there with Cameroon versus New Zealand. Now, both teams yet to register a point at this World Cup. So it's all to play for with that best third place finish up for grabs, with Argentina currently occupying the fourth third place spot with 2 points. A win for either Cameroon or New Zealand will put them in pole position for knockout round qualification. All right, New Zealand ranked 27 places higher than Cameroon, but the African side put up a really good fight in the first half against the Netherlands. Angenet with the goal, and that really caused the Dutch problems. Who's the favourite here for you, Helen Ward?
I think it has to be New Zealand. However, I think Cameroon will cause them some problems with their strength and their pace in the right areas. New Zealand, having played them a couple of weeks ago for Wales, albeit in a friendly, I'm not sure how much they've got to offer at the moment, and they're struggling for goals.
I think it's a tough one.
It's a really tough one to call, because you've got the excitement of Cameroon and the fact that we've seen some good stuff from them, but it's been a disappointing tournament for New Zealand so far, who we know can do better than they've performed so far. New Zealand still winless after 14 World Cup games, by the way, so we're going back a bit here historically. They did have the better run into the tournament though. Here's some useful advice from Avi Ersig, the New Zealand player. Groundbreaking tactics. We need to focus on scoring more goals. Not letting goals in would be really good as well. Thank you very much, Avi, for that. Although not as stupid a comment as you might think, as it is win or bust for both of these teams. By the way, if they do get through as one of the best third place teams, they could face either France or England in the round of 16. So we're saying this one's a tough one to call. I'm going to go on to the glamour tie in this group. Canada versus the Netherlands. An enticing match, this one. Both teams came alive in their second group matches. So we're hoping that form continues. And here's the dilemma in this one for you, OK? That awesome Dutch attacking line versus a Canada back line that is the only side yet to concede a single shot on target in this tournament. So how do we start to call this one, Gemma?
I think this is going to be a really tight game. There's a lot of top quality players on display for this game, and I think it'll probably be one of the best games so far that you see. I still think, and I'll stand by my opinion, Christine Sinclair is an absolute danger threat.
Hasn't scored yet in this tournament.
I just think she'll produce the goods when it matters, because that's where her experience will come into play.
And she'll do it for her country.
She loves Canada. I've played with her in the past, playing pro out in America. She's probably one of the best nines I've ever played with. You could play a centre-half and she'd do a job for you. I just think she knows how to deliver. But at the same time, the Dutch, they've got Van der Sanden.
Well, you've got experience of these players, right?
Exactly.
Their attacking line, Lieke Martins, Miedema, Van der Sanden, you know, so many of them.
I just think Holland may have a little bit too much creativity for Canada to hold on.
Because that defensive back line, right, they're going to have to hold on very, very hard, aren't they?
Yeah, the Canadian goalkeeper's probably had a bit of a holiday so far. She's not faced a shot on target yet, so she's going to have to put a deck chair away for this one, I think. But yeah, it's a bit like the unstoppable force and the immovable object, isn't it? Tactically, what do you do? Do you go away from what you know as Canada and try and attack more and, you know, negate some of your defensive ability?
Because I think Canada are quite boring. In the nicest
but they get,
possible
but they
way,
get
but
results.
They get
and,
the job done.
You know,
don't
they play to their strengths, which is obviously a solid defensive structure.
Very
and then they've
so.
Got, soon to be, most probably, the world record goal scorer up the other end. So you can afford to be that defensive when you've got someone like that. And they've got some good young players as well, alongside Sinclair in Jessie Fleming and Prince, who I thought had an excellent game.
Nichelle Prince, yeah she scored in the last one, didn't she?
She had a really good game, a great impact.
Over in Reims, commentating for Fox Sports, it's great to be joined by Derek Ray. We're covering this game, Netherlands versus Canada. It should really be an exciting one, but not as exciting as that nice cake I saw on your Twitter timeline. Just tell me what you've been scoffing today.
I've been scoffing a beautiful pink eclair. And it is a speciality of this Champagne region. They're very big on pink vanilla biscuits. Le Biscuit Rose de Reims, and they've actually turned it into an eclair as well, and I can vouch for it. Absolutely delicious.
So the French have managed to make an eclair biscuit, which I thought was against the rules in fine patisserie, but it sounds like they've pulled it off. Let's talk about the game, though, first of all. So I gather, Derek, that in the pre-match press conference, Netherlands coach Serena Weigman said that her side need to defend Christine Sinclair as a team. She poses that much of a threat. So surely this is going to play into the hands of Sinclair and her Canada teammates.
Well, I think Canada will not need any motivation at all. And Christine Sinclair is an interesting one because, you know, she's one of the finest players we've ever seen in international women's football, but she's quite a shy character off the pitch. She's not one for big, loud statements or anything like that. And, you know, she does her talking on the pitch. But the Canadians are very interesting. There's sort of a contrast in approaches here. And with the Netherlands, there's been some criticism, you know, from the media. And I was talking to one of my friends, the Dutch TV commentator, Jeroen Elshoff, at one of the games earlier this week. And he's been saying, yeah, you know, we've been critical of the Netherlands. I was saying, well, you can't be too critical because they won the first two games. He said, no, but we hold the team to a high standard and we want it to be carried out that way, you know, almost as though it were men's football. You know, if this were men's football, you would be analysing every little thing. And if something's not 100%, you would say so. And so there's an atmosphere there that I think is quite interesting to follow.
Yeah.
And of course, they're going to have 6,000 or 7,000 fans at the game tomorrow, too.
Yeah.
So the Dutch are really fascinating at the moment.
Yeah, so it basically feels like the Netherlands have got a point to prove. And after that first game against New Zealand, I can understand why. I thought they were better against Cameroon, but then perhaps the lack of strength of the opposition there was a little kind to them. Are Canada wary about that amazing attacking force that Netherlands have?
I think they are, and I think they have to be, Kate. You know, I think if you look at what Netherlands have got and what they can produce with, you know, the front three and then somebody like Danielle van der Donk as the playmaker, you know, this is one of the most talented sides. But I think that the Canadians are quietly confident that their strengths lie also in defence in terms of being able to repel a team like the Dutch. And, you know, the statistics are there for all to see. Canada have been very difficult to play against, very difficult to score against. You could maybe criticise Canada sometimes for having a lot of possession, you know, creating chances, but not necessarily scoring the number of goals you might expect based
yes.
on that.
But are they going to have to pull something extra out to get past this Netherlands team with that, you know, wonderful attack?
They probably are. You know, I think that the Netherlands go in for me as slight favourites. Canada will probably require something a bit extra special. But, you know, they've got a player like Janine Beckie at Manchester City, who I think, and I was talking to her today one-on-one, you know, really feels that she has benefited from going to play in England with a team like Manchester City. She thinks it's made her a more rounded footballer. And she's somebody who, you know, can do something out of the ordinary. I was looking at some of the statistics. 10 attempts at goal by Janine Beckie, 7 of which have been outside the penalty area. So she fancies her chances when it comes to something from long range. And maybe it'll come down to that for Canada. So I think this is going to tell us a lot about the two teams. I would say that the Netherlands are probably better 1-11 by a hair, but Canada maybe have the deeper, more rounded squad.
It'll be an interesting game between two sides who have made it through to that round of 16 already, as has the USA and Sweden. And I must ask you about this because, of course, you are very familiar with that USA side and also covering the NWSL over in the States for Fox as well. And there's a bit of background here, isn't there, between the USA and Sweden? Is there still bad blood between the sides? Have they swept that away, or will we see any hint of that?
I think most of it has been swept away. You know, I was talking to a few of the Swedish journalists at the game the other day. I covered Sweden's 5-1 victory over Thailand, and they don't think that there's going to be much residue from what happened back in the Olympics. Now, you're right, Kate, what you say, that the two countries know each other very well, that they always seem to get drawn with each other in Women's World Cups. And it was a pretty dull 0-0 draw last time out in Canada when they faced each other. I think, again, it's similar to Canada and the Netherlands. Both countries are longing for a proper test, and they should get that. Although the caveat would be the Swedish journalists, again, a little bit critical of their own team. They sort of think that maybe they haven't quite scaled the heights that they're capable of in the two matches so far. I counter by saying, well, you know, it's early days and the best teams always hit a peak when they need to hit that peak. And that's not necessarily in the first two matches against, let's face it, fairly gentle opponents in Chile and Thailand in that group. So this, again, is going to be discovery time.
Derek Ray there speaking to us. He's commentating for Fox Sports throughout the tournament. So let's pick up on Group F then and the very enticing prospect of USA versus Sweden. We've been talking about this one all week because we should see a really, really good game. Both teams are going to be tested for the first time, really, aren't they? And this will decide who tops the table with a much more difficult next game for the team that finishes in second. It's arguably then a real first real test for both those sides. Helen, how much are you looking forward to this one?
Yeah, again, I think it could be one of the games of the tournament so far. USA have got so much about them. Their attacking ability is frightening. The players that they were able to leave out in both games so far and still post really impressive scores says it all about them. But Sweden have impressed me as well, and they impressed me when they played England. They've got a very good structure, very good organisation, and some excellent players to deliver on what the coaches want from them. So it's not going to be, obviously, it's not going to be an easy game for the USA. I still think they're probably favourites with the players they've got, but Sweden aren't going to be a pushover, and they're going to be desperate to finish top of the group because of, you know, the pathway to potentially the final. It's going to be a lot more difficult if you finish in second. So, yeah, another really tight one to call.
It's a bit of a grudge match. That's because the USA's only ever Women's World Cup group stage loss came against Sweden in 2011. Not only that, of course, Sweden were responsible for ditching USA out of the last Olympics, called them cowards. That got Hope Solo banned for 6 months. So there's a little bit of beef there. Can the Swedes, though, really cause the Americans problems tomorrow? Or is this USA side, in your opinion, just too good to crack?
I think it's going to be a really tough game for both sides. I think it will be a bit cat and mouse, to be honest. In my opinion, I think USA are just edging it based on the personnel that they've got. I mean, I'm really excited to see the lineup for the USA team. At the same time, again, I've got a lot of teammates in there that are high quality players that I've played with. Magda Eriksson being an outstanding defender, along with Jonna Andersson as well.
And she's had a good tournament, hasn't she? Yeah.
I just think with a great goalkeeper, one of the best there is as well in Hedvig Lindahl, and I know she's confident.
Well, Hedvig said it's the first time since the Olympics that we met in this setting, so I think that they want to put us in our place.
That's Hedvig for you.
Straight up.
She's straight up, and she's only happy beating the USA, I'll tell you that.
Well, we'll see if it happens. Well, the final game to talk about tomorrow is Thailand versus Chile. And those sides meet in a battle for third place, with both teams yet to win a point at this World Cup. It would, though, still take some going for either side to make it through to the last 16. But if they win, Chile are the much more likely team to get one of those best third place berths with a superior goal difference. So Thailand versus Chile. Helen Ward, what do you think?
I think Chile will win this one. It's been a joy to watch, you know, the scenes when Thailand scored their goal. You know, obviously meant a lot to the team, the players, the staff, everybody involved. But I think Chile have got more about them. Christiane Endler has been unbelievable in goal, probably one of the best goalkeepers
yes,
in the
I
World
agree.
Cup so far. Yeah, I think it will be Chile's to win.
Do you see any threat from Thailand, Gemma? They scored their first World Cup goal, didn't they? Chile haven't scored any goals at all this World Cup. Do you think that will do anything for Thailand's confidence, or is it just way too soon to be talking about them doing anything at this World Cup?
I think obviously scoring is great, and it always builds confidence in a team. I can't quite see it. I think Chile are edging this one a little bit, especially with a solid goalkeeper as well. So I'm going to go with Chile. I don't think it's enough.
OK, well, four games to predict now. Yes, it's that time again. So Group E, Canada versus the Netherlands. Helen Ward.
2-1 Netherlands.
Gemma's shaking her head.
She's just stolen.
I did that yesterday.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
OK, so you're matching up on that one. Cameroon versus New Zealand.
I'm going to go 1-0 Cameroon.
I feel like it might be a 0-0.
Okay. Well, that doesn't really do anyone any favours in that group, does it? USA, Sweden in Group F. Helen Ward?
2-0 USA.
Has she stolen your result again, Gemma?
She's killed me again.
There's a psychic link between you two in the studio. You've known each other since you were 10, and now you're reading each other's minds.
I'm going to go with 2-1 because I believe in Sweden have got the ability.
So you think Sweden are going to win this one 2-1?
No, I think USA are going to win 2-1, but okay. I think Sweden can get a goal past them 100%.
Thailand, Chile, Helen Ward.
3-0 Chile.
1-0, Chile.
Okay. All right. Well, an unpredictable day awaits us tomorrow. We'll be dissecting it all as ever, and we'll have our fingers, toes, abacuses out to work out who is going to be making it through to the knockout stages. Helen and Gemma, thank you for taking us through a roller coaster of an evening. And in the meantime, we are at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to digest it with us, do get in touch with us, please do. And at offsiderulepodcast.com, where you will find 5 things we learned about both the England and Scotland games and plenty more to digest. Otherwise, there's a new Carly Telford column there where she talks about making her World Cup debut. Definitely one to check out. That's all for today. We will see you tomorrow. A biento.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.